KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your host for Chatterbox.
We're here.
We are here.
And we've got a table full of paperwork for things that, like, I don't even know what we plan on talking
about. There's so many things here on this table, topics for us to discuss, that we can't even see the glistening marble anymore.
So what's the first thing? Let's step right into it.
Rayplay. I've got about 18 articles about Rayplay. Now, but let's leave that for later.
Last week, we tiptoed around Rayplay because of Superfan Joe's parents.
We tiptoed around rape, honestly.
Well, yes. Really, they're the same, right? So thank you to Super Joe for coming in last week. Superfan Joe. Super Joe, is that also good? I don't know. Anyway, Rayplay. I don't know what this new news is about Rayplay.
I just wanted to make that joke real quick, but I really want to leave it until the end of the show.
Oh.
If that's cool with you.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, let's do
it. So, you know, simmer on this, Rayplay, a game about rape. And then maybe we'll go back to that.
Yeah.
All right, so what do we actually have to open with?
So, well, what I'd like to open with is my my never-ending adventures in Xbox customer service.
You know, I heard you may have had an issue this week.
Yes, and you heard correctly.
I kind of wish you Twittered, because then I could discover it almost on the
yeah,
slide.
Yeah, but that means I have to use, technology and social networks.
You know, the Xbox allows you to Twitter.
Well, that would have been nice, except that my Xbox red-ringed once again on, was it, Friday or something? And this Xbox...
You'd think they would find an actual fix for the problem, rather than just getting a new one.
I think these things are just engineered just to die in a year. If it works for longer than that, you're just lucky.
You know, I talked to Rich about this, and the motherboard is actually bent by design inside the thing.
It's bent.
Yeah, a motherboard obviously comes out of the motherboard making machine, totally flat, at least the silicon part of it.
Okay.
But it's it's screwed down on legs, so it doesn't touch the exterior case.
Right.
But these legs are a varying height across the Xbox, so I guess the center one is higher, which forces a bend into the motherboard.
Now, I heard that there's a fuse and this rope that's coiled around, and when you get it, it's slowly burning down.
You mean like a ticking bomb?
Yeah, it's slowly burning down.
That rumor may not be corroborated.
And
I don't know.
After about a year, it finally gets to the end, and it just breaks your whole thing. No, but this is okay. This is my third Xbox that I've had.
I'm not amazed. You're not alone here. Lots of people have had multiple Xboxes.
Okay, first one failed within 15 minutes. Okay, when the Xbox first came out, right, I got it at lunch, took it to work, turned it on. Oh, this is really cool. All right, fun times. 15 minutes later, it red-ringed. Okay, 15 minutes. I ran back to the store because it just came out, right? So this is when, Best Buy was, putting all their Xboxes in the table, 10 feet from the store entrance.
Yeah, you shouldn't have even been able to get a replacement.
Yeah, so I went there. I'm like, this thing's jacked, and fortunately they had three left, so they just replaced it. So I was like, okay, cool. Okay, fine, right? So new Xbox, that one lasts for 2.5 years, okay? So until it red rings, which is also lucky for
me.
This
was relatively recent. I remember us talking about it.
Yeah, it was, in fact, it was last April.
Okay.
That's when it failed. And so... thankfully, this was in the arbitrary interval of their 3-year warranty, which, I mean, I should say it's nice of them to extend the warranty, although the period of 3 years is an arbitrary choice. Now, so I got that one. It's not a repair. It was a replacement. It was a new console.
Refurbished, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know, but as far as I understand, it was new.
You know, when I got mine, so yours was replaced probably... So your original did not have an HDMI cable or HDMI port.
Right. And actually,
your replacement did not either.
Right.
Even though the HDMI models had been out for a while.
Clearly
they're still producing units specifically for the purpose of replacement through this warranty.
Maybe. Well, if I've had to gone through...
Because you can't buy a new one that doesn't have that port.
Right. Okay. So here's what happens now, right? So Friday night, right? It's been almost exactly a year since I've had my new Xbox, right? Turn it on. You know, okay, Red Ring. Okay, what the, you know, what the hell is this?
Did it just Red Ring all of a sudden? Because mine, like, I could see signs of issues before it.
Well,
Red Ring.
You remember,
like, freezing screens,
right,
but no Red Rings.
You remember that before I had this weird thing where it would think that games are DVDs. That was in my original model. This one, no warning whatsoever. It just, right?
All of a sudden.
So I call Xbox customer service, okay? Now, the first thing that freaks me out about Xbox customer service is that every time I call, and I've called them maybe about 5 times over the years, I feel like I'm talking to the exact same person. Literally. It's the exact same person. The speech pattern's the same. The voice is the same. The intonation's the same. The everything, all the subtleties.
Hello, sir. Thank you for calling.
And well, they weren't Indian. Okay.
Yeah, I've actually noticed. I'm just joking.
So, anyway, at the end of that call,
we love our Indian listeners, by the way.
At the end of the call, I do love Indians, and I love Indian food.
I do not love Indian food,
and
I just want to set that out there on the table.
At the end, I'm shocked on and disappointed. But anyway,
you like the spicy foods.
Yes,
I went to a fantastic Indian restaurant just last week.
India is a land of flavor and
spice.
I've been to
tandoori something.
Yeah,
really.
Tandoori.
Something.
Tandoori times?
Yes.
Yeah. It's they have a couple good dishes there.
All right.
Anyway, but I'm pissed because the chef there won't make it hot enough for me. I talked to him.
Okay.
He thinks they look at me. They're like a white guy, not going to be able to handle the heat because he's so pale. But okay.
They've got a 0 through 10 scale, man.
Yeah, I have to overcompensate. I asked for like 11 or 12 to like overcompensate for the whiteness, but it still doesn't work. Anyway,
okay.
That's beside the point, right? So when I ended that call, but I'm going to go back to the call. When I ended it, right, I was like, by the way, what's your nationality? Because I'm just like freaked out here. Like, I feel like I'm calling the exact same person every time. Okay, they're Filipino, okay?
Okay.
So I don't know that many. I know a few Filipinos. They don't seem to talk like that. But for some reason or another, every single Xbox service representative is who's Filipino. Like they just, I don't know. I think they're brothers or something. They all talk the same. Anyway,
I may be able to explain that. I don't know much about the Filipino language, but it's an Asian language. And I can tell you that Chinese, at least one example, is what's considered a tonal language. I discovered this by listening to a Radiolab podcast.
Okay.
Whereas English is not a tonal language. So they'll have like, at least in Chinese, and I'm just guessing that other Asian languages are similar.
Your pitch, is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, like a lot of people, Chinese people tend to have a higher percentage of people who have a perfect pitch, which is sort of a gift. And it's because they grow up with this language of tone, and so that you could talk to someone, have them say a word or a phrase, and then the next week they'll say it, and it'll sound like an exact copy.
Right, right.
Intonation, tone, everything is exactly the same.
Because the pitch actually imparts meaning.
Yes.
It's not just the words themselves.
The same word saying it different ways,
right,
would mean totally different words.
Okay, so that's fascinating. So here's what happened when I was actually talking to them about the problem, right? So the first thing that they tell me is that it's out of your warranty.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Because you got it over 3 years ago.
So I was like, okay, and thanks to Microsoft for putting verbiage on their website that says, if you would like to dispute your warranty period, then you could do blah, 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 right? So I'm like, that's the word I want to use. I would like to dispute the warranty period.
Well, the thing is, you did buy it over 3 years ago.
Yes. Now, their position was, at that call, because regardless of what happens, the 3-year warranty period does not reset. Right?
That's correct.
And my
no warranty that you ever will get from any company ever does.
My position was, since you've given me a new product, and I've done nothing to it other than just use it as it's supposed to, that the warranty period should reset.
Yes. Unfortunately, you are going against the norm.
Now, I am going against the norm, and I love doing that. Right, and not an engineer norm, but the norm. So here's the funny thing that happened, right? So I've been through customer service a bunch of times, so I know it's customary that, you know, you go through the whole rigmarole with them, and then you say, okay, can I talk to your supervisor, right?
Yes.
And the funny part is that when I say that, right, the guy says, you know, he's got a script that he has to follow, right? So he says, you know, well, I can do this, but the supervisor will tell you the exact same thing I'm telling you. And they're told to say this, right? And the other thing I discovered inadvertently is that not only is saying things part of their script, but waiting until you give a response is part of their script.
That sounds about right. Although I'm a little... It seems presumptuous to say that this is the case based on your experience.
Right. Well, check this out.
Right? Seems to be.
Seems to be. Right.
Okay.
So the guy says, okay, I'll find a supervisor for you, but he will not be able to tell you anything different than what I'm telling you. Right. Now, I don't like this response. Right. And so I don't want to acknowledge it with any positive words, but I can't say, no, you're wrong. So I just don't say anything, right? Guess what he does?
I'm not able to guess.
Silence.
Okay.
So for about 15, 20 seconds, silence, because I don't want to acknowledge his response. Anyway, we go back and forth a few times, and he insists. He gets to the point where he's like, yes, but I have not failed in my duty to tell you this and that, and I guess it's a very noble profession and all that. And anyway, he was just looking for acknowledgement. It was actually really interesting. He was looking for acknowledgement that I heard what he was saying, which is apparently part of their script. So anyway, I'm frustrated.
Conclusion I can get from this is that you're kind of a D-bag when you're the customer on the phone.
I have very high standards.
Okay.
So here's the funny thing. Okay, so we couldn't find a... He couldn't find a supervisor, so I was like, okay, I'll call back some other time.
What is it, like a dark place and they need a flashlight?
Yes,
to find,
there's apparently like a team of small number of supervisors and they're not always available, right? So, he put me on hold a couple times. He's like, I'm sorry, I can't find him. I'm like, okay, I'll just call back later, right? So call back on Monday, call back on Monday, explain to this other guy, like, okay, here's my issue. I'd like to talk to a supervisor about it. I've already talked to a customer service representative. And he's like, okay, well, maybe I can help you. I'm like, well, I've already kind of gone through that already, but if you want to, sure, let's talk about it. Right. So anyway, I was like, okay, so this is what happened. And I think it's fair if you guys replace my console, because I've had it for just exactly a year and it's a new console and it's a replacement. And he was like, okay, we'll send you the shipping label and you won't have to pay for it. So I'm like, okay, guess I talked to the right person this time.
All right, and have you received the new one?
Yeah, I haven't received the new one. I have the shipping label, right? So I can send it back. So I'm completely mystified because one guy is like, no, 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 right? And the other guy's like, okay,
well,
yeah, you can
take,
do that.
Take note that... the second time you called was the second time you called, and
right.
That's recorded. But
right.
When they make a second call, that they continue to have a problem.
Yeah. So that's a little annoying, right? Because it's the whole, like, how much is this? $100. I don't like that. Okay, how about $10? What?
Really? That sounds like the kind of game you like to play.
No,
so.
I don't like to play that game. It's
all right.
Infuriating.
All right. Well, we'll be back after this.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
All right, it's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Welcome
That's
back,
us.
Guys.
What's your name?
What's whose name?
Your name.
My name is Ara.
And I'm Alon, and I am here to tell you about the University of Advancing Technology, whose website is the UAT.edu. Not the UAT, but just UAT.edu.
And not UAT either.
Not UAT. Well, I mean, that would work too. If you go to their website, you'll learn about the stuff that they have to offer in terms of programs for you as a student. Speaking of students, Colin!
Hi.
Colin, you are on the show. Superfan Colin has visited the show from far, far away in
Tempe. Yes.
Yeah.
It's, what's like, is there a stage like right below Super? Because I don't think we can give him the Super designation.
Either. Omega?
Well, no.
How many miles did you travel to get here?
15 minutes.
And did you use an actual car to get here? Because I didn't see a car in the parking lot.
I got dropped off.
Got dropped off. Were those the people who were here right as I pulled up?
Yes, probably.
Ah,
they're listening right
now. You. Oh,
yes.
Well, thanks for dropping them off. Okay, so you're carless.
They're hiding behind the bushes.
That means you're out
apparently.
Of state.
Exactly.
Sweet. Where are you from?
I'm from Apache Junction, actually.
Not out of state.
Not out of state. No.
But you said yes anyway.
Yeah.
One demerit.
Damn it.
So.
Shh.
All right, so you're not out of state, but you are out of state, but not really. Apache Junction, I don't even know where that is.
That's right
that
outside of Mesa.
Not it's close.
It's right outside of Mesa. It's like where civilization ends and the desert begins. It's like between Coolidge and Mesa.
That is sad. So your high school class had how many people in it?
We had like 200 people.
Is that the whole high school or just your class?
Just my class. We're still pretty big, but it's like just desert after us. It's like where the Phoenix metropolitan area ends.
So we were just talking about snakes. You've probably seen a lot of snakes.
Yeah, and squirps too.
What?
Squirps? Scorpions?
Is that what you call them?
See, they,
when
they
we see them.
They
yeah.
use the word so much that they dropped off the several last syllables.
Squirps?
Squirps, you know.
Oh, scorps?
Scorps, yeah.
Okay, that was weird. All right. So with nothing to do out in Bumblef, you probably play a lot of video games.
Yes.
Yes. And now you're going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And for what are you going to school?
Creative writing.
Creative writing. So we now have a creative writer who's a super fan and visiting the show. And you contacted us wanting to do something for the show. How long have you been listening?
For about, ever since you guys did the Jack Thompson interview. That's when I heard about you. And I was like, wow, you guys are in Arizona.
Dude, that's Nate Vig days.
Yeah, that's like totally before my time.
Oh, yeah.
That's like 4 years ago.
Which means
it?
You read Penny Arcade because you found out about us through Penny Arcade.
Yes.
All right. Man, that was a long time ago.
It just lasts and lasts.
So you've lived through Nate Vig. You've heard of Nate Cox and Sean and everybody.
That's when I started. I remember Sean. He was on like the first or second time.
Yeah, I mean you've lasted the longest of anybody.
Really?
I mean, you're in here for the long haul.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I really sucked back then.
Well, I mean, you should have heard me when I started. I think you had me beat. We saved the best for last, which is clearly Colin since he's the last. So, you want to write stuff, but we don't write much down here because we use computers. So can you do creative typing?
I can try.
Okay. And how creative do we want to get?
I think pretty creative.
Okay. Gotcha. Now, so you've also heard of Nate something else. I can't remember his name right now. Like comedian guy? Come on. And he would come on and he would do a segment during the show.
I remember him. I don't remember his name.
Yeah, I can't either.
That wasn't Nate Vig?
No, it wasn't Nate
That wasn't
Vig.
Nate Cox?
That wasn't Nate Cox.
There's a third Nate? Is
there
this what you're telling
me? Lots of Nates. His name might not even be Nate. I don't know.
I think his name was Nate.
Nathan, perhaps.
Yeah. He was good.
Nathan
he
Short?
Was good.
Smart. Nathan Smart! Nate Smart!
I do remember that, actually.
Yeah, it's not his real name. But Nate Smart. All right, so is that sort of thing you're looking for? Like, we're looking for comedy, the drama? Because I can play parts.
I think drama would be great.
I can do voiceovers.
I don't know. What are you guys looking for? An intern.
Sound effects. We need a variety of sound effects on this show. That's what it's really meant.
What we need is a gaffer.
Sure. And we need gaffs.
Do you handle tape well? No. All right. So we've got you to creatively type things for us, but around here we don't prepare a lot. I don't know. Is that?
It's like
is that an illusion we're trying to?
No, it's agile. You see, we have an agile workflow here. So we're prepared for any
like
emergency.
Dynamic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And there's also a lot of synergy.
Good. Well, in talking about Colin, we have wasted enough time not talking about video games. So let's get back to that. Colin, do you have anything that you would like to discuss? Other than being a super fan of Chatterbox.
When I'm thinking about stuff to discuss, what you guys been playing recently? I know there's been some lacking in the gameplay.
So I've talked to people about like this whole marriage thing and this getting a new house thing, and I haven't played enough games. So I saw some God of War 3 last night. I played some Super Street Fighter 4, but I can't say that I got a lot of time in with any of them. So I don't want to give like a full review. Super Street Fighter 4, honestly, if you're listening to this and you're a fan of the game, you probably have it because it comes out today. It's pretty much the same thing, just a new character, so it's not a big deal. Although I don't like having to choose your super move. You remember in Street Fighter 3, you had to choose like which one you wanted.
Right.
So they've added that into Super Street Fighter 4.
Right.
And I'm not keen on that. First of all, because it slows the game down in between matches. But I think
like 1 second?
No, people decide. I don't know. I can't decide.
Okay, check.
It's a decision I don't want to have to make. It stresses me out.
Yeah.
So like, let's say Ken can do some big old dragon punch thing. Or he can do some other type of super kick thing. If he can do it, why can't he choose which one he wants to do? Right? Like, Shouldn't the option be there during the fight rather than before the fight?
It's just one of those things. And
would you somehow be overpowered if you had two and your teammate also had two to choose from? Like, I don't understand.
Don't know. Couldn't tell you.
He could choose either one. Maybe it's a character picking thing. I know which character you pick. So then I pick, because a lot of people, like the pros, will wait to let their opponent pick the character before they pick their character.
Right. I'm sure there's a similar strategy with your super move.
Yeah, it turns into this stalemate. And there was a game at one point, by the way, that allowed you to secretly pick the character. So it would keep it in the random slot, and then you would press, like, left, down, right, whatever, and pick your character, but it wouldn't actually show it on the screen, so you could pick it.
And that's cool, too.
Yeah. Although, kind of a bummer if you mess up. Anyway, I'm thinking maybe this is a way to help. Like, you pick your character, he picks his character, but then you pick the super move that's good against that guy, the character that he picked. So it gives you sort of a double back for the fight situation.
Right.
But that wouldn't be the case if they just let you use both. You could just use the one you wanted.
How are the new characters, though? How's Juri?
Juri is pretty hard to use. She's the one that I remember at CES, Seth was saying that she's kind of crazy and like she'll be good, but you really got to know her. And then, you know, so there's the characters who are easy to get a hold of and then hard to figure out. The first guy I used was Hakan.
Ooh, the big oily guy.
And he's just friggin' crazy. Like, when I say crazy, like, the storyline associated with him is ridiculous. You start off, you know, the single player, and it's this whole thing about oil, and he wants to be rule the world with his oil.
Does any Street Fighter story make sense?
But here's the thing. Like, it's not crude oil. It's, like, the oil that he rubs on his body. And what's weird is if Dalsim throws a fireball at him and he blocks, even because you can throw oil on yourself and then you become more potent a player or something. So I throw oil on myself to do some sort of move. I still have oil on me. I'm all shiny. Dalsim throws a fireball. I block it. I don't burn.
Wait.
Well,
you don't set on fire?
Set on fire.
It's not flammable oil, obviously.
Well, that's strange.
Can you throw oil on other players, like to make them slip up or anything?
Listen, you may be able to. I did not. While using him.
Maybe if you use,
I don't know what to tell
if you use enough oil on yourself, can you blind your other opponent?
You know, maybe
you can become so shiny that the other player
I wasn't able to see
anything.
I didn't go into the button list or the move list, so I didn't really try to learn him. I played like one or two matches with him, just what I could figure out on the spot. So like I said, it's not a very good review of the game. Haven't gone through it all. It was quick.
Yeah, but we don't do reviews here. We do impressions.
Yeah,
and that's really the best way to.
But
do
if
it.
Obviously if you're a Street Fighter fan, which we are, you know, you'll get it, you'll play it, you'll love it. Good times. At least you don't have to unlock characters. Yeah.
Speaking of reviews, actually, there's been a little bit of a hubbub about Famitsu. Famitsu is
the Rock.
Is a Japanese magazine, like the biggest.
Famitsu does not waver.
Video game magazine in Japan, right?
That's serious business.
So here's what they did. They actually involved the ex-editor-in-chief of Famitsu as the center of an advertising campaign for the new Metal Gear Peace Walker game.
That seems strange. Was he allowed to review the game?
Well, Famitsu gave it a perfect score. He's the ex-editor-in-chief, but he's, like, the president of, like, the Famitsu or the media company for it, right? So he still works for them.
Okay.
And this is, like, an enormous conflict of interest, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, you would think so.
And apparently, it's funny because somebody at Kotaku did an article about, hey, this is really fishy. And then it got translated for, apparently there's a Japanese version of Kotaku, which the Japanese people didn't write, but they translated the U.S. version. And now, like Famitsu and or Konami are punishing.
Are they upset with Kotaku?
Yes. And they're punishing Kotaku Japan for translating an article that one of the American writers wrote about, hey, this guy's this looks like a conflict of interest.
Well, it's not just translating. They also publish.
Which
I think
totally
that's
is.
The key component,
well,
that they publish.
Perhaps.
All right. Well, we'll be back after this break, folks. Stay tuned!
Hey, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
And we are back, the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. Head over to chatterboxgameshow.com to see a totally outdated website that has our information, Alon at chatterboxgameshow.com, or Ara at chatterboxgameshow.com. That's how you can email us, like Colin did, to say, hey, I want to come on the show. Colin, what's our next topic?
We're talking about Demon Souls and how it got beaten.
That is a cop-out, sir.
Even I'm going to say that's a cop-out. And you know that I've invested almost 150 hours into the game.
Virtually or completely honestly? Yes.
No, there's no virtual about it.
You have definitely invested that much time in the
yes.
game. That's cool.
Right it's a on. Good game.
Have you played any more of that game that we just downloaded on your PlayStation? Trine is the one I'm looking
at. No, I haven't.
I haven't actually taken the time to play it, but I think I should. Have you played Trine?
It's nice. No, I haven't, nice. But it's great.
You gotta give it a shot.
It looks nice.
All right.
Yeah, it could be good, too.
All right, so then what is next here?
All right, let's see. Why don't we, you guys want to talk about video games and art and not art?
So somebody contacted me, I think TJ, I want to thank TJ, by the way, I never mentioned his name on the air yet, when I had that issue with the RSS feed, he pointed it out, and then he contacted me over Facebook of all places. I'm not big into the Facebook, but he hunted me down, and then I went on there one day for something else.
Yeah, those guys are pissing me off.
He starts chatting with me on the Facebook, and I'm like, I've never seen a chat, how does this work on Facebook? I don't know social media, it's only my job, and so then I had to shut him down. I was like, dude, I can't, I'm off. So anyway, TJ, thanks, you know, for being a listener and for pointing out that my RSS feed was all screwed up.
So what does that have to do with the artistry or not of video
he
games?
He also emailed me that week saying, hey, or no, this is what he brought up in the chat. You need to talk about Ebert's new article about games right. as art or not as art or something
right.
like that.
Right, okay. So this is a little curious because a while ago, Roger Ebert, everybody knows who Roger Ebert is.
Yes.
Yeah. So he wrote an article about why video games can't be art. And, of course, this angered and vexed the myriad video game fans from across the globe.
Here's the thing. Video game fans get angered and vexed
very
easily.
Yes, yes, at the drop of a hat, right? So somebody basically gave a talk addressing why video games are actually art, right? That was the position. And now Roger Ebert wrote another article pretty recently, like let's say, a couple weeks ago, about a week or two ago, on his journal on thesuntimes.com. And I guess he took an even stronger position than previously. So now he contends that video games actually, just by definition, can never be art. No, or maybe in millions of years somehow, or in decades they could be, but not in anyone's lifetime.
Okay.
So,
and we're not talking just about the cover art.
Right. Well,
which is definitely art.
I want to take an angle on this that I don't hear anybody taking, because...
Can I hear what he said, though, before we move on to our opinion of what he said?
Well, yes. And I will try to describe it for you. As I talk about it,
he's handing me the piece of paper
So you can you can edumacate yourself on his actual article while I'm talking about it.
You'd think I would do this beforehand.
Yeah, well, you know, see, we're agile, so this is how things go, right?
Okay.
We're at the bleeding edge here, everybody. So what I understand from his position is that it's video games aren't art in the same way that football isn't art, and chess isn't art. And now I got to say a couple of qualifying statements here before we really get into the nitty-gritty, right? So the funny thing is that, first of all, it's really, really hard to define what art is, right? So you could, I think, define art in a way that encloses video games or includes them, right? And you could just as validly define art in a way that pretty much excludes them. And I think that from someone coming from Roger Ebert's perspective, I can totally see how he understands video games as, by definition, not art, right? On the other hand, right, it just depends on what your definition is. So, for example, right?
This is one of the great debates, by the way, the very definition.
Right. And,
of the
and,
word
and,
art.
And it really, ultimately, it comes down to this, right? And I think that the crux of the issue is the question, you know, is it valid to find art in things that were never intended or constructed as such? And if your answer is yes, then I think that, okay, then video games can be art, right? If not, then, well, still maybe yes, maybe no, right? But I don't think that in Roger Ebert's definition, he allows for the possibility for example, a beautiful tree or mountain vista, right, to be art. Now, the difference here, right, his original position was that video games aren't art because art requires authorial control. And video games, by their character, do not have authorial control. However, some video games can have authorial control, and some games do. We just don't know exactly which ones they are because we didn't participate in the making of them. You know, there are some assumptions about what people think are those games and aren't those games, and ultimately we don't know exactly which ones they are. Anyway, what my position is, and what I would contend, is that if you think that, you know, if you can find some beauty in a video game, and that can be beauty in, you know, the way the mechanics work, that can be beauty in the way the game looks, that can be beauty in the way that it moves, the way that it animates, or just maybe even the
overall
structure
of it. How about just a fantastic gameplay idea? It's funny because he mentions Braid here. And why?
Right.
So you think of a video game, it can contain art, for instance, you know, the graphics or certain
right. Well,
screens.
Nobody
right?
debates that it can contain art, right? But the debate apparently is, you know, whether, you know, the actual whole is a work of art or can be a work of
art. Well, and here's what I'm. My point is that, so yes, obviously it could contain art with music and visuals, but when I'm playing a game, I'm looking for the experience itself. And when I played Braid, which is an example given in his article, I got this feeling, this emotion of, wow, this is awesome. This is new. Dare I use the word fresh. It was a unique and very gratifying experience to me. And for someone who dissects games like we do, and like I'm just going to assume Colin does, that is a sort of, like, I would assign that the label of art because it gave to me that emotional response.
Okay,
and
so,
very few games do that. Extremely few.
So here's my question to you then, right? Can a roller coaster be art?
If I love roller coasters so much and it does something, one might do something to me that others don't. In some emotional way, but then you would argue that the other ones all are art and just bad art.
Well, that's another thing, right? Sometimes the difference of whether something is art or not is if it's actually good art or trash.
Yeah, but I mean,
taste. If I can interject, right? So taste factors in heavily. It's funny because you can always say there's no accounting for bad taste, and everyone has a different concept of taste, and really, there's no unequivocal objective way to say this taste is good and this taste is bad, right? I mean, I don't know how you do it. So,
I mean, luckily, this all can be answered by someone in this room because we have a new age college student who's into creative writing and the production of the poetic art. So you can answer this question once and for all.
If games are art.
If games have the potential to be art, and okay. If they are, those are two separate questions.
Well, I'm a gamer, and I really...
And a creative typist.
Exactly. And I don't know, I feel like games like Braid, it has that artor... To take from my film and media studies 100 class, it has that artor style to it.
Say film and media studies 100 class? You
exactly.
Have to throw that in?
Exactly.
Right.
It's got that artor style to it. Like, the dude had a full, like, vision of what he was going to create, and he made Jonathan Blow.
Yes.
Yeah, he wanted to...
Furthermore known as the dude.
Yeah, he had a whole vision when he was coming into it, and he really made... He stuck with that. The same thing with Portal. Like, they never backed down, and they never, like, compromised their style for any purpose, you know?
So I...
But you could do the same thing when you're designing and constructing a roller coaster.
You could. I'm not...
And would that make the roller coaster art?
I don't think roller coasters... It's not a form of media, though. I don't know.
How is it not a form of media? You can view it from afar. You can appreciate its structure. You can experience it. It subjects various accelerations onto your body, which you can enjoy and appreciate in varying ways.
I think Riddler's Revenge, that might count as art because that was awesome.
Riddler's Revenge?
At Six Flags. Six Flags Magic Mountain.
Oh, okay.
Best theme park, by the way. They've got like 12 roller coasters there. It's crazy.
Which I'm sure it takes you 3 hours to ride.
Go there when there's nobody, which is amazing. But anyway, that's another story.
Well, if our criteria for judging art is like that emotional response, then I'm sure roller coasters are considered. It's all about design, you know? It's all about...
As is
right.
doing it.
So that's actually... This is the angle that I was looking for, right? If your criteria is that it says something special to you in a certain way, whatever that means, right, then it's art to you. And if that's true, then it's actually irrespective of what the intent or plan was, or even if there was a plan in creating that thing. And in that same way, nature can be artistic.
Yes. But nature wasn't produced by like a human or anything. It just kind of came into being. And that's beautiful, right. But is it considered design?
It was produced by God, man.
Obviously.
And he's the great artist. Right?
Okay, sure.
I like we can all laugh about that. We'll be right back.
That's right, everybody. We're back once again, Chatterbox Video Game Radio. The time just flies off the handle.
And we have superfan Colin all the way from Tempe, Apache Junction, Mesa, somewhere far away.
Hey, everybody.
Tempe, by the way, is like 3 feet away. Colin, remind me, what is our primary sponsor here at Chatterbox?
UAT, the University of Advancing Technology.
Yes, it is the University of Advancing Technology. If you want to go to school, you could go to wherever Colin goes. Or you could go to UAT and spend your time talking, playing, building video games. Doing some of that other stuff they do. But video games are the part that we like to focus on. Now, we were talking about video games as art or potential of art. And I claim that Braid gave me an art. The emotion that a great piece of art may. It's very difficult for me to convey. Like, I say it's art because I appreciate games and and mechanics that games can produce, and then the fun that I can derive from it, even though I know you hate the word fun.
I do hate that word.
Yeah. So now that when this game introduced to me some excellent new experiences and new puzzles in ways that I had never conceived of, or even, like, if someone tells me this idea, be like, I would not know how to program that into a computer. And he came up with this, however, you know, he did it, that dude, Jonathan Blow. And so, for me, I would claim that is art. But that's also because I qualify video games as something awesome. You, however, seem to have a different argument.
Well, see, the funny thing is that, I mean, my personal opinion, right? This is one of the subjects where I can find myself very easily arguing
both sides.
Really any position about it.
Well, and that's what happens with great unsolvable debates.
Right, and because honestly, I mean, who cares? It doesn't change anything if we decide that this is art or not art. It's just, I mean, this is just a semantic discussion, and it's an interesting discussion, and that's why I find it nice to argue both sides. But
stops being interesting to me when people start getting emotional about it.
Well, right. And it's funny because everyone who, basically every gamer in the world, just gets angry at this notion that games can't be art. So you know what? I'll make an argument right now for most games, probably not art. Probably not art, not in the sense that they're bad or they have bad taste, but most games are probably not art because they are not intended as art. They're intended as... Really, they are intended as a money-making device. Honestly, it's a commercial endeavor.
Well, I mean, the games that we buy at a store, but there are many, many, many games that are free and created by people who are really passionate about.
Well, right. So obviously, there's a subset of games that are built not for commercial purposes, or
potentially even more numerous than the commercial games.
Possibly, or there is a commercial component and there is a non-commercial component, and I think that's pretty frequent. There's such a thing as commercial art. That word exists, right? The last thing I wanted to say about this is that, to put it in terms that maybe Roger Ebert could understand or relate to, if you really think about it, right, everything that we can really like perceive or experience, right? You can reduce it to patterns, right? And you could say, you know, I think what Roger Ebert's position is that, you know what, like art is a pattern that's created by someone with a specific intent of doing something, okay? And we as humans, what we are essentially, you could argue, is that we're kind of like pattern matching machines, right? We observe certain patterns that other people have created, and that does something to us or it doesn't do something to us, right? And we observe and or experience it in various ways, whether it's, you know, looking at a painting and thinking about it, or being subjected to G-forces in a roller coaster, or, you know, getting an emotional reaction out of Braid or whatever.
Or doing it.
Right. Or right. So, yeah, gosh, you know what? I'm up against the wall here now. I don't know what else to say.
Listen, we don't have to.
Yeah. So
when I heard that people wanted to talk about this again because Eber wrote this new article, like, I just...
I don't know.
Same old argument as last time we talked about it, right? And that's the thing. When it's... Like I told you, like, so I've had the art class at UAT with actually a very good professor, I thought. And we had this debate. What is art, right? And does it include intent? And it's just...
Okay, so that's good. You got me back on track, right? So let's make some assumptions. If we assume that art has to have an authorial control, it has to have an intent, right? And it has to have a goal of communicating something to somebody, right? In much the same way that, let's say, a masterpiece painting does, right? I still think, and I haven't heard anyone voice this particular opinion, that video games can be art, and maybe someone like Roger Ebert can appreciate this, because such thing as the way a video game mechanic is constructed can be beautiful and artistic in its own way, as almost like in the same way that, you know, the person who invented, let's say, I don't know, the rules of basketball, right? There can be an artistic way of constructing the rules of a game in the same way that there can be an artistic way of delivering or designing performance art. And so in that vein, I think that video games do belong in that circle. I think for somebody, you know, of Roger Ebert's age and background and history, I can very, very easily see how he doesn't perceive these things to be art. Because if you don't have experience and history of playing a lot of games, it's hard to tell what the beauty is in a game mechanic.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And actually, you know, I keep trying to come up with homework assignments for college student superfan Colin. Have you played through Braid?
Yes.
All the way through?
Yeah. Well, I didn't get the super secret ending that I hear that I need to get. I kind of like played through it, and then I meant to go back to it.
Dude, getting that super secret, it's a bitch. But it's not that special, but it's interesting. But as long as you play through, that's good, because I was going to give that as a perfectly good homework assignment for next week. So what other game is tremendous? I got Portal and Braid in the same year, and I felt overloaded on too much awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I could name some tremendous games, but they're pretty niche.
What do you
I'd like to hear. I think our fans would like to hear.
Well, I mean, okay, so some of the obvious ones, like Demon's Souls is pretty cool.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I that's right. That just happened. Gradius V, one of the most beautiful.
Keep pushing it, man.
Beautiful. It's just beautiful. I don't know what else to say. It's beautiful on all levels, visual, mechanical.
Okay.
It's
you and I do not have the same love for shooters.
And you know what? It's really in just a class by itself. Like, all other shooters are just a pile of garbage compared to that game.
Okay.
That's what it does.
Let's see if third time's a charm.
You know what? It takes a certain kind of person to appreciate it, much like it takes a certain kind of person to appreciate a certain type of masterpiece.
Okay, so what's your third fantastic game that our listeners should go play?
Okay, so I'm drawing from history here. So another game that sticks out in my mind specifically is Super Castlevania IV. And it's funny that these are all sequels, isn't it?
Yeah, I gotta tell you, that's one that I've actually, like, I've played a little bit, first level, whatever, but I've never actually played through Super Castlevania.
Yeah, it was a mind-opening experience for me.
I should go play it.
It's, yeah.
That's one of those games that I always say, I should go play it.
And it's really, it's kind of like the bastard child of the Castlevania series.
It's funny because I put a lot of time into Castlevania 3 for the NES just because it was that time
that
of
was
my
a good
life
one
when
too.
I had a lot of time.
And actually, you know, another one that I hold in just as high regard, but it's also actually lauded more readily by people who are into these weird niche games, is the Rondo of Blood, Dracula X, which was a version that didn't really legitimately come out here.
Didn't it come out in some form?
It just came out with another Castlevania. It wasn't like the...
Yeah, you can get it on PSP. And the funny thing is they completely bastardized it on the PSP. They redid the graphics, but it wasn't just the graphics redo. The mechanics are actually redone, and it's terrible. But you can unlock the original. And the original looks like crap, but... is mechanically beautiful. So what can I say?
Okay. So am I right to think that Castlevania 3 was the only one that allowed you to actually use different characters with different abilities and all that? Or have newer ones?
No, Castlevania or Dracula X lets you do that, but not in the same way as Castlevania 3.
Okay. I remember Castlevania 3 because I played it when I was a kid, and it was awesome because you had like a hunchback you could play as, and there was all this different stuff going on.
Dude, that game had to come out when you were just being born.
Yeah, it was. I played it when I was like 5, but I was like, this game is sweet. First Nintendo I ever got, and I was just like, this is awesome.
I'm glad your parents were cool enough to keep a Nintendo around for you. Because when were you born? Like
90. So 90? I got a Nintendo secondhand from somebody.
Wow. All right. Wow.
So before we go, I hear the music playing, but I want to just throw out a question for everybody, right? And for Roger Ebert types. If they don't think video games are art, I wonder if they think, or Roger Ebert thinks,
probably not
that,
speaking to our listeners with this.
Right. That mathematics can be art, or programming can be art, or a mathematical proof can be art.
That's the question?
That's the question. I think I can find art in a mathematical proof, actually.
I think you can find art in anything that any group of people appreciates. And if there's appreciation, then there is art.
And maybe that's what it is.
Then there's potential in it.
Potentially.
Like cars for you. Probably think many cars are art.
Definitely. Full. Absolutely. Yes. Without question.
All right. Well, with that sound comes the end of the program. Thank you, Superfan Colin. Maybe you'll be back next week. I know I will be.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.